Do you need an attorney? Call someone you can trust. The Broward County Bar Association, a not-for-profit organization, was founded in 1925 to foster courtesy, ethics, and professionalism, as well as to provide necessary legal services throughout South Florida. The Broward County Bar Association, 3,000 members strong, has attorney members that work throughout the entire state of Florida, as well as nationally and internationally. Remember, the Broward County Bar Association is a referral you can count on. Call the Broward County Bar Association at 954-764-8310 for all your legal needs. A referral you can count on. 954-764-8310. Or contact online at browardbar.org. Non-lawyer spokesperson.
Welcome to the award-winning legal news and review recognized from the Florida Bar Award of Excellence, featuring the law firm of Santucci Fiore Fiel, practicing intellectual property, business and entertainment law and litigation. Located in downtown Fort Lauderdale is Mike Santucci, legal panel attorney who co-chairs the intellectual property section of the Broward Bar. Legal News and Review, the only real problem solver radio program using the law, with your moderator Philip Bell and legal panel attorney Gary Singer, chair of the Broward County Bar Association's Real Property Section. Gary Singer is board certified in real estate law, also syndicated columnist from the Sun Sentinel. He is an expert in his fields of practice. And nationally known criminal defense attorney Gary Ostro, Esquire. Over 30 years defending the accused in both state and federal courts. With over 500 jury trials to his credit, Gary Ostro's practice focuses on Fourth Amendment issues as related to search and seizure, as well as federal civil rights cases against police officers, as well as the departments and city in which they operate. Now, here's your moderator, Philip Bell.
On the docket for today's program, appellate law. This is a part two of a two-part series, and we're featuring Dan Sampson, founder of Sampson Appellate Law. He is board certified in appellate law, and that does make him an expert as well. We were going to pick it up where we left it off, but first, again, I want to introduce our legal panel. Gary Singer will be on next week, but Michael Santucci.
How are you, Phil?
Great. Good afternoon. And, of course, Gary Ostro.
Hey, Phil. How you doing?
Great to see
back.
You. Absolutely. You absolutely. And, you know, today I'm very pleased to introduce a very successful appellate attorney, Dan Sampson. And, again, he is the founder of Sampson Appellate Law. He is board certified in appellate law. And, again, I want to emphasize that makes him an expert. There's only a handful of attorneys that actually have that certification. Dan, good afternoon and welcome again to Legal News and Review.
Thanks again, Phil, and thank you, Michael, and thank you, Gary, for having me. It's great to still be here.
You know, I wish we could have gotten everything out in the first segment. That way I don't have to keep everybody here. Hello, Facebook Live. But in all seriousness, this is very important. Appellate practice and appellate law affects everyone's life, whether it's Trump's executive decisions, you know, executive orders.
Absolutely.
To a host of things that, you know, affect our day-to-day life as well. And the firm you actually came from before you were on your own here and the founder of your own firm was called what?
I started my practice with in the South Florida office of Greenberg Charig,
right,
in their appellate department under the tutelage of former Chief Justice Arthur England and Elliot Cherker, one of the top appellate lawyers in the state.
Boom. That's a bomb, that name dropping right there.
So, yeah.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you a question. One of the ways I really got to know my colleague, Gary Ostro, we had an arbitration together, not against each other. We were actually on the same team. We brought him on to cross-examine some guys that were in law enforcement, and that's kind of what he does really well. Before this segment started, we were talking about a case that involved arbitration that you wound up having an appeal or defend an appeal from. So tell us a little about how that happens, because that's not that unique. That's not that common. So,
absolutely. There was a group of lawyers representing a putative class in a class action context of small doctor groups, 1 to 5 doctors who use a medical billing company called Allscripts. And they purchased the medical billing software from a subsidiary of Allscripts. And that's in that contract, the sales contract, it has an arbitration clause. And in that clause, it actually was a very particular arbitration clause. It specifically limited its application to its signatories. And so the defense moved to compel arbitration in the trial court, and they did not prevail. The trial court ruled that because the arbitration clause specifically named its signatories, the parent company could not enforce it even on a theory of equitable estoppel. There are certain theories in which non-parties can enforce an arbitration clause, mm-hmm. and equitable estoppel is one. It applies for parent companies and subsidiary companies. And so the defense, Allscripts, took that on appeal. And actually, this is not something that many people get to do. It was a case against my former boss, Elliot Shurker, which made it all that sweeter, but also difficult because he's such a good attorney.
Right.
And when I took a look at this, I thought it might be tough to convince the Third District that this exception to equitable estoppel applies. Maybe we should just try and focus on equitable estoppel doesn't apply in the first instance. And so there's a concept in appellate law called the tipsy coachman, where a trial court can be right for the wrong reasons.
Because they're drunk.
That is what, that's the theory.
Is that
right?
An inside joke? Because you lost me.
I'm starting to like
this. It's actually an appellate doctrine, and it comes from, I suppose, in the 1800s, right? You'd have a coachman, and they might go to one side, they might go to the other, but as long as they stayed on the road,
what was
they
the doctrine
were okay.
called?
The tipsy coachman doctrine.
And what does it mean exactly?
It means that a trial court can be affirmed for a reason not stated by the trial court. So you can be right for the wrong reason.
It's like a judge ruling on a motion that the state didn't even argue, say, the lawful, the pretext search argument, and the judge can find that it was a legal search and that based on an argument the state didn't even make, had a motion to suppress. Is that an analogy?
The analogy would be the appellate court could rule that the trial court was right,
but not for
the reason it stated.
Not for the reasons argued in the brief, in the appellate brief.
No, they do have to be the reasons argued in the appellate brief.
Okay.
So it's and it has to come from the record. It just
from
doesn't have
facts.
To be exactly what the trial court
from
said.
From the facts in the brief, but not the argument necessarily. They can go on any argument as long as it's based on those facts, correct?
No, most
well, trial
judges
can do that.
Trial judges can do that.
Well, what's
appellate
the difference?
Judges are the part of the preservation doctrine in the appellate law.
But it's still based on the same record of facts. And I would think an appellate judge can take that record of facts just like a trial judge can and find, like I said, that example, a search to be lawful based on an argument that wasn't made, but the facts support.
They sometimes do, but they're not supposed to.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, they do a lot of stuff they're not supposed to.
If you're an appellant and you don't make an argument in your initial brief, it's unlikely.
It's waived.
Right. It's waived.
Okay.
There are exceptions, and you probably know about them, but you don't want to bore our listeners with
give
those
us the
exceptions.
Names of the judges.
I'd like to hear. I'd like to hear the rest of your scripts case.
The all scripts. So I looked at it. I was able to formulate a theory that equitable estoppel didn't apply in the first instance. Wrote a brief on that issue. We had oral argument and. Actually, this is interesting because it shows the length of an appellate process. From the notice of appeal to oral argument was about 14 months.
Wow.
And it took another 9 months from oral argument for decision. So they're coming up almost on 2 years, which gets back to something we talked about in the earlier segment, that the appellate process can take a very long time.
What's the longest trial record you've ever had to appeal in terms of pages, approximately?
I'm going to say a 3 or 4 week trial, and that was probably 20,000 pages.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So that's a lot of, and that's an hourly undertaking.
His eyes are like this big.
Things.
Right.
I said his eyes are like this big.
Yeah.
Yes.
I understand that you can have what's called a cross appeal. Even if I won, I may not be happy with the size of the judgment, and I could appeal that even though I won.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I filed a notice of cross appeal this week.
Really?
Yeah. So, and this is a great example.
Is that in jury trials, bench trials, or either?
In either.
Yeah.
There's both the federal rules of appellate procedure and the Florida rules of appellate procedure permit you to file a cross appeal to the same order that was appealed by the appellant.
Interesting.
So generally the way that comes about is appellant appeals an order that ordered them to pay some money, and they thought they should pay zero. Mm-hmm. but the appellee thought it should have been more.
And it's a beautiful negotiation tactic because it's like, okay, you want to fight our verdict? Right. Well, you may wind up having to pay more. How about
another
that?
Leverage?
Absolutely.
Dan, tell us, tell the listening audience and those attorneys of us who might not know, because I don't know the difference all the time, the difference between a writ of prohibition, a writ of certiorari, and a writ of mandamus, for example.
Sure. Those are all used in different instances. The most common is a petition for writ of certiorari. The appellate courts, by constitution, the authority to issue its original jurisdiction to issue writs in certain instances. Writs of certiorari are used to review non-final orders that are not otherwise appealable under the non-final order rule.
And a writ is what?
It's a
brief, right?
Well, that would be the petition. The writ is actually
it's
what the trial
a command.
Is. It's a command.
Okay.
The appellate court enters a writ like it would enter an opinion.
I didn't know that.
So you don't file a writ. You file a petition. The appellate court grants the writ.
Okay.
And so generally certiorari is for discovery orders, which cannot be appealed on an interlocutory basis, and it's generally reserved for what's called cat-out-of-the-bag discovery orders. So orders overcoming the attorney-client privilege. That's immediately reviewable
by
petition.
Let me make it a little challenging. I'm making it too easy for you. If I file a motion to disqualify or recuse my criminal judge and he denies it, what's the remedy?
A writ of prohibition.
Very good.
Which
you
is
passed.
Thank you. Let's see. Now, can you name the other instance
mandamus.
In which you would use a writ of prohibition?
There we go. From what my understanding is, a writ of prohibition when the appellate court mandates or directs the lower court to do something that is contrary to what they did in the lower court.
No.
That's what I said. That's my understanding. That doesn't mean it's the truth.
So it's when a writ of prohibition is used to stop a trial court from going outside its jurisdiction. So that if they need to recuse themselves, they would go outside their jurisdiction by not recusing themselves.
Why is that a jurisdictional issue?
Because if you don't have jurisdiction,
either you have it or you don't have it.
Right. You either have jurisdiction to continue with the case or you don't.
I want to issue a writ of prohibition against attorney Gary Ostro from prohibiting him from eating that last slice of pizza.
Which I should have offered, but since I didn't pay
that,
for it.
You got so it.
It's yours. It wasn't that good, Phil, I'll be honest with you. That was
so, man, what you were actually describing was mandamus. And so a petition for mandamus
is
to have a trial court do a ministerial act for which there is a clearly established right. It is very difficult to get those petitions granted.
Is it possible to appeal a lower court's decision before that court actually has reached a final judgment?
We've just been talking about some of the ways that you can go to the appellate court in the middle of the case.
Non-binding, non-final judgment, the writ.
Sure. I just want to clarify
these
this.
These petitions are one way. The other way is Florida Rule of Appellate Procedure 9.130 has a list of non-final orders that are appealable as of right, and you can appeal them in the middle of the case, or you can wait and appeal them with the final judgment.
And that's civil, not criminal.
That is civil, yes. And then in the federal court, since I know we have a nationwide audience, in federal court there's actually a much smaller universe of interlocutory orders, injunctions, orders that have the effect of an injunction, and then new and novel issues for which would advance the ultimate termination of a case. Very few courts have ever found that that exists.
Those are all of our radio hand signals. We're going to take a break now.
We are. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to the award-winning Legal News and Review on 96.9, 103.9, 740 AM. I want to welcome our iHeart listeners, now our TuneIn and iRadio Now across the country. And we're speaking with Dan Sampson. He is one of the best appellate attorneys. He's board certified. He is an expert. And there's a host of cases that he's been involved in that actually set precedents. And we're going to learn what does that actually mean when you set a precedent and how does it actually affect people's decisions about court as well. We're going to come right back.
Do you need an attorney? Call someone you can trust. The Broward County Bar Association, a not-for-profit organization, was founded in 1925 to foster courtesy, ethics, and professionalism, as well as to provide necessary legal services throughout South Florida. The Broward County Bar Association, 3,000 members strong, has attorney members that work throughout the entire state of Florida, as well as nationally and internationally. Remember, the Broward County Bar Association is a referral you can count on. Call the Broward County Bar Association at 954 954-8310 for all your legal needs. A referral you can count on. 954-764-8310. Or contact online at browardbar.org. Non-lawyer spokesperson.
Welcome back to Legal News and Review. Recipient of the Award of Excellence from the Florida Bar, featuring Michael Santucci of the law firm Santucci Priori, practicing intellectual property, business, and entertainment law and litigation, located in downtown Fort Lauderdale. Reach them at 500law.com or 954-351-7474. To contact the legal panel hosts and guests, go online to belegalbuzz.com. Once again, here's your moderator, Philip Bell.
That music.
Yeah.
I keep
that. This one's specifically for this show, for you.
Oh,
we designed this particular, what do you call
very,
it as a music man?
Legal news.
I produced it. Sal wrote it.
There
Sal
you
Foster.
Go.
Oh, there, thank you.
We looked your bio up. We said, what's the best, I don't know, musical? Well, yeah.
You're welcome. I appreciate it. Thank you. You're welcome.
Let me welcome our audience back. You are listening to Legal News and Review, and let's get some court to order here. When we left off, we were talking about what actually what is a precedent? How is the precedent is actually set?
Well, precedent is general. So our entire legal system is based on the concept of stare decisis, which is precedent. So when an appellate court issues a holding, an opinion and a holding on an area of law, trial courts in that in the area that appellate court has purview over. So, for example, the Florida's Third District Court of Appeal reviews decisions from trial courts in Miami-Dade and Monroe County. So when the appellate court issues a ruling on a matter of law, every trial court in the Third District Court of Appeal area, so Dade and Monroe County, must follow that precedent in future cases. And then the same would be true of the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals, which covers Florida, Alabama, and Georgia, or the 4th District, which covers where we're sitting now, Broward, West Palm and St. Lucie counties. And then I don't know if, Phil, you'd like me to get into it, but you can end up having conflicting precedent from one district court of appeal to another, and that's when you actually can get to the Florida Supreme Court.
Ah, that makes sense.
Because if the third district says the law is one thing and the fourth district says it's another, you can ask the Supreme Court to exercise their discretionary conflict jurisdiction.
I had a question, and this is not it's a little probably off the beaten path, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Is there any way a post-conviction remedy or a appellate remedy can exercise or potentially utilize two or three different vehicles, whether it be a writ of cert, mandamus or prohibition, and be a legitimate basis for it? In other words, is there any kind of procedural appellate way to proceed where you can use one of the three or two of the three or three of the three to get the same remedy? Is that ever happen or is that ever possible? Do you understand the question? Because it's a little convoluted. In fact, it's very convoluted.
Well, I understood the question, although I understood it to mean you're asking in criminal cases in a
No, I'm asking in any appellate capacity.
Oh, you would not use two different writs.
I'm not saying use them. Be able to use one or two for the same essential remedy.
No. I think what you may be referring to is the all writs power.
Is that? I never heard of that. I can act like I know what you're talking about, but I don't.
There is something called all writs jurisdiction, and that is generally used only to, say, the 11th Judicial Circuit, the trial court in Miami-Dade County, has an administrative order. You might go to the Third District Court of Appeal on the all writs jurisdiction to review that administrative order. So I guess that wasn't the question, and the question was and the answer then is no.
Okay.
Because each writ has a specific remedy and a specific basis to invoke the court's jurisdiction.
And just to wrap it up, in one word, if you were going to distinguish a mandamus from a prohibition from a cert, use one word to distinguish each.
Mandamus is ministerial.
Okay.
Prohibition is jurisdictional.
Beautiful.
And certiorari is privilege issues.
There you go.
Wow. See?
Well, one thing I want to emphasize.
I could be certified now in appellate law.
Absolutely.
Like a board certification question.
Yeah. Well, one thing I do want to emphasize, what Gary Ostro said, is that he does not do appeals. This is enlightening to him because he's learning things as well. And that's why you need somebody, Dan. That's
most
all you do. Well,
don't do
that's
appeals.
That's right. Dan, that's all you do is appeals. It's all you've been doing for how many years?
I've been doing appeals for 13 years.
Yeah.
I clerked for an appellate court judge, so I've been behind the curtain. I know how they – I go to their events. I know how they generally look at cases and think about it. I know how to review a case in the way that they're going to. And I think that's the value I can add.
You know, this says exactly what Gary Ostro was saying. The difference between a good attorney and a great attorney knows
the judge. Well, that was actually Mr. Mike Santucci's credit. I will credit where it's due.
And you know the judges.
But it's a little different in this context. Yeah. You know what? It's the joke wouldn't apply necessarily to appellate judges. But what I'm saying
is
not as much anyway.
I know how they think and what can motivate them to write an opinion or not.
How much of a disadvantage, if any, do you think you're at having not been a trial attorney proceeding? And listen, I give you all the credit in the world. I'm sure everything Phil said about you and more is true about your expertise. Do you feel that it's necessary or part of your training and experience that it should be a part of your past in becoming an appellate lawyer or not necessarily?
I don't think so. I've seen a lot of trials. I've read a lot of transcripts from trials. I've sat in on trials.
Which gives you essentially the same experience.
Which gives me some experience.
Right.
I don't have experience examining witnesses.
You don't have to be an appellate lawyer.
Right. And so I actually don't think that you necessarily need to have litigated a case to be an effective appellate lawyer.
Obviously not.
I think I am.
Right. You'd be the exception if that were true.
But it's a different view. Again, in the trial court.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's a different view. That's super analogy. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember that at a judge's investiture recently, Judge Emus told a joke that if you're the trial court, you know, it's a duck. But if you're the appellate court, what is a duck? When is a duck not a duck? And if you're an appellate judge, you have young lawyers working for you and helping you come to a decision.
And don't forget the public policy arguments before the appellate court about how many ducks should we have?
Of course.
Good point.
All those
should
things.
We save the ducks?
Right.
But if it walks like a duck, talks like a duck, it's a duck.
While we're talking, and Phil brought up precedent, when does it go beyond precedent and create new law? What's the criteria for going beyond and creating new precedent? And I'd like to know the answer to that myself.
Well, completely new, if it's a completely new area of law, which there aren't.
Well, what if it's not? You're making it too easy.
So you want to
like drones. So drones are a new area.
Well, yeah, but that's too easy. Let's talk about Fourth Amendment stuff or something that's not brand new like drones or aviation law, which that's too easy. Because every case could be new precedent, new case law. When can you develop new case law in something that's been litigated for 100 years like the Fourth Amendment?
Sure. There is a procedure to change precedent.
And this is not legislatively?
No.
Okay, tell us how do you do it. That's exactly my question.
You ask an appellate court to sit en banc. And,
is that what that means?
Yes.
Wow, I'm learning so much. I was faking it for 30 years. I must have used that term 50 or 100 times. I had no idea what I was talking about. De novo, I must have said that 1,000 times. I had no idea what I was talking about.
Yeah,
oh, Lord.
When appellate courts sit en banc, they can reconsider past decisions.
Wow.
Yeah.
Which is that's how you create new law.
That's how you change the law.
Which is synonymous, right?
Yes, okay. That is synonymous.
You know, it does go by so fast. I mean, appellate law is so dynamic. It is not a cookie-cutter approach. You've got to do your due diligence. Let's face it, it's a matter of record in the law. That's what Judge Levinson said to me.
Yeah.
At the time, he was a criminal judge, and he says, Phil, I always get appealed.
That's a good point. It doesn't seem that judges care about how many times they get appealed. I think there should be statistics about all the judges in the courthouse and how often they get appealed, because it might cause them to be a little more careful in their decision-making. Do you think that they care or should they care? What's your opinion
about
that?
I think they should care.
They
don't. I think they do care. I think they're lying to you when they tell you they don't care.
But their statistics,
they're humans just like us.
Their statistics tell me they don't care. There are judges who will go unnamed in Broward County on the circuit bench that have never granted a motion to suppress in 25 years.
Yeah. That may well be true.
So it's not a coincidence. To me, that's just the
folks, we got to wrap up. We're out of time. I just want our listeners to hear, if anybody has an appellate issue, attorneys out there especially, and, you know, lay clients, you want to appeal your case, how do you get in touch with Dan Sampson?
And look into the camera.
Tell our Facebook Live friends.
Hi, Facebook Live, and hello, attorneys listening. You can reach me at my office at 305-341-3055. That's 305-341-3055. I'm also always available on my cellular, 305-726-1131. Again, that's 305-726-1131. And I want to thank everyone for having me on.
Yes.
Oh, you did a great
Appreciate that.
Excellent
job.
And your website again is?
My website is SampsonAppellateLaw.com.
Oh, that's easy.
Yeah,
that's easy. I Googled you, by the way. Okay. Dan Sampson, you came right up. Dan Sampson Appellate, you came right up.
Okay. Great.
Mike?
Well, that's it for Legal News and Review for this segment. Thank you, super lawyer, criminal attorney Gary Ostro.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Phil Bell. Thank you, appellate attorney Daniel Sampson. If you're listening to the radio out there, please put your phone down. You're almost there. Listen to more radio, okay?
That's
Don't
right.
look at your phone.
Listen to Michael Santucci's band, also known
Rolled
as
whiskey.
The Drunk Zombies. What?
No.
Rolled Whiskey. And remember, everyone.
Remember.
Be legal.
You've been listening to the award-winning Legal News and Review, recognized by the Florida Bar's Award of Excellence. Legal News and Review, featuring Michael Santucci from the law firm of Santucci Priori, located in downtown Fort Lauderdale, and practicing intellectual property, business, and entertainment law and litigation. They can be reached at 500law.com or at 954-351-7474. To contact the legal panel hosts and guests, go to BeLegalBuzz.com. And to reach Gary Singer, board-certified real estate and syndicated columnist, appearing in 400 media outlets, including the front page of the Money Section every Monday in the Sun Sentinel, from the law firm of Gary M. Singer, PA, call 954-851-1448 for Legal News and Review. Remember, be legal.